from, as Paul said, no man taught it to me. And he talks very specifically about communication with sources greater than he, which the religionists have always assumed that that was God or Jesus or something. But was it? He was always specific about who God and Jesus was, but whenever it came to this, he never did say it was God or Jesus, did he?
No.
I wonder why. Because it probably wasn't. Now, if I've laid that little grammar, go ahead.
Well, that's an excellent summary of the main outlines of Heirs of the Gods Bill. And, of course, what it means is that the Bible is essentially a space story. We're not saying, of course, that God and Jesus were extraterrestrials from another planet.
No, I didn't intend to.
We're saying that in between the ultimate creator God, there was a race of extraterrestrials who came to Earth, and that they modified the original creation of God the Creator, which was an evolutionary creation, by the same techniques that our own scientists are using today in what we call genetic engineering.
We're saying that the experiment that failed was started by these extraterrestrials who came to Earth, and that was Jehovah.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying that that the Bible speaks of Jehovah.
Well, a lot of people will suddenly equate Jehovah with the creator of the universe.
Well, not the ultimate.
The ultimate is the biocosmic energy.
Right.
You see,
is
the Holy Spirit or the Logos.
Well, I try to make this this definition because in most people's mind, whenever you say Jehovah, they think of the creator of the universe.
Yes.
And yet two different words are used in the Hebrew here. Yahweh is used in some of the texts, and in others, a different word, Elohim, is used, which is plural and means the gods, hence our title, Heirs of the Gods.
I think you were specific in Heirs of the Gods to point out that the term that would refer to the creator of the universe, that word, was only used twice in all of the Bible.
Yes.
And from then on, whenever we... As we read the Bible and we see the Lord God, Jehovah, Jehovah, whatever that is not the same term that was found in that first chapter of Genesis, which did indeed refer to that master creator of all the universe.
There are actually two accounts, the E and the J account, scholars sometimes call them, the Elohist account and the Yahwist account. And the interesting thing is that these have been spliced so that it's almost impossible, except by a technique like our archaeolinguistics, to separate them. And the splicing could very well have been done, as you suggested, by an editor like Moses or by priestly editors who were working under Moses' direction, say.
Bill, I have something very interesting here that I think the listeners in Proverbs 8, and there's no doubt about it here. It's talking about wisdom. It's talking about the Holy Spirit. It says that the Lord possessed me. That's the Elohim, when you look that up.
Mm-hmm.
The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting. I was there from the beginning, or ever the earth was made. When there was no depth, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills were, I was brought forth. While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world, when he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set up a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the fountains of the deep, I was there. And it says something very beautiful. I was like one as brought up with him. And when you look the root words up in the Hebrew there, you get the Logos, you get the Holy Spirit, you get Ruach, the wind, the mighty wind, the breath. So that's talking about the Elohim having had some help there, you see.
A lot of help along the way.
It's
also talking about something that science is beginning to wrestle with, and that is the ability to bend space-time, as we call it. To move into the past and to move into the future. That we live in this local phenomenon where we are in this three-dimensional, very lateral kind of world. which isn't actually the reality of the world at all.
That's right.
Time dilatation.
Yes. And we found that the extraterrestrials that we call the Celestials had learned space-time travel so that they could actually travel into the future, as our own scientists say we may be able to do, perhaps in another century or two.
We probably are doing now.
Approach the speed of light. And this is the basis of many of the prophecies we read in the Bible. This wasn't a matter of foretelling the future. They actually had visited the future, and they knew what was going to happen.
In Psalms and in Peter, we have an excellent example, and we back all this up with the oculinguistics. An inertia drive, 1,000 years is as a day, and a day is as 1,000 years. And they're talking about the time dilatation there. And when it says that they will come as a thief in the night, it's talking about inertia drive. And when you look up the root words, it's just absolutely astounding.
What the parallelisms between what's said there and what our own space scientists are saying is possible now.
Yes, science is uncovering so many of these things now that are causing so many of these little phrases...
Rediscovering.
...to make sense. Well, they're rediscovering, actually, in their own way, or they got some help. There is a lot of preponderance of evidence that exists that technology was here at one time or another.
That's right.
And has been here before.
Atlantis.
And it was taken away.
Yes.
Because, you know, who wants to put a lot of technology in the hands of the people out here on the freeway? Give us all a break, please. You know, the whole place will go down the tubes again.
Right.
But we do see that happening. We'll be right back with Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden. I'm Bill Jenkins on Open Mind. You've been running short of those things, haven't you?
Well, we have, and we are deciding whether we're going to go into the trade paperback. Our agent is thinking about packaging Heirs of the Gods with our book on aging.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're just trying to decide what to do. We have the last time I was on your program, within 1 week, I'm happily I can say they sold out in July. We still have some.
I see.
But we're just trying to decide just which way we're going to
go. Well, you're going to have to make them quick because I caught my one and only copy going out the front door the other day, but I did get a tackle in like a ram guard and preserved the book.
Well, we've recently formed a nonprofit foundation for research into aging, and we're bringing out a new edition of Heirs through this shortly.
Probably through that, or through the agent, we're not quite sure yet.
Well, one of the reasons I wanted to kind of set the background for the astounding things that are found in AIDS, Heirs of the Gods, is that from that very same source, basically the Bible, the ancient writings, the sacred writings of old, that you have found that they were very advanced in what they were telling us in terms of our own physiology, our own medical practice. I don't know whether you can practice, I suppose, is as good a word as any, as to what happens to us in terms of our physical well-being and what we do to ourselves and what we do ourselves whenever it goes wrong. And you have glean that information and using these techniques that you used in order to write Heirs in the first place, and you have found some rather astounding things, but further than that, you have now been dealing with them in a laboratory basis with people. Tell us a little bit about that before we take a break for the news, because I know people want to talk to you about how they can get rid of their wrinkles and get younger.
Some of the most remarkable results, Bill, and as you say, it is astounding that the Hebrews 2,500 years ago should have been in possession of information which we think of as 20th century discoveries. How did the Hebrews of Moses' time, for instance, know that saturated fats were a dire threat to health when it's only in the 20th century with studies like the Framingham study at Boston Medical Center?
Perhaps a new Ralph Nader.
You know, that it's been discovered that a high-fat diet is conducive to heart attacks and cancer. Or how did they know that the eating of shellfish was a danger because of the high purines, which cause a high level of uric acid that leads to joint disease and kidney problems?
Is that the reason I get sick when I eat shellfish?
And the meat, the red meat. In Deuteronomy and Leviticus, it says, do not eat the blood. Drink the blood of the meat because the disease is in the blood, and
that's
just
common sense. Don't tell me you can't eat red meat. Come on.
Phil.
And the Mosaic Law laid down public health practices that are more advanced than any country, including our own, is practicing right now in the 20th century.
Where's that? I'm just sitting here thinking about how I'm going to get up red meat, and I didn't hear what you said. I mean, if I can't have my beef and lamb and pork.
But where did this information come from? Obviously not from human sources. It was passed on to this ancient civilization by extraterrestrials who were already more aware of the parameters of human health and life than we are right now in the 20th century.
You know, it's always struck me, although I don't think it is as deep as what you're talking about, but the dietary laws of the old Jewish religion, and some people still want to practice them today, were rooted in some very fundamentally right, medically right things, particularly about the not eating of pork.
Remarkably advanced, yes.
And to say that, that some rabbi just came up with this idea there out of the blue is stretching things a little bit. One of the prophets, or one of the leaders of the Jewish community, got word from somebody who knew what they were talking about.
That's right.
Now, you can say God talked to them, the creator of the universe, look down on this little speck set earth and say, oh yeah, tell the folks not to eat, pork because they'll get trichinosis. Well, you couldn't tell them that because they didn't know what trichinosis was or that there were little germs.
Uh-huh.
You know, try to tell the folks back there that there are little bitty germs that they'll be eating. And they'd never believe anything you had to say from then on. So they couched that into religious ceremony, which then would force them to have the right dietary laws, for whatever they were, for their own good at that time, at that level of their technology.
Yes.
But where did they get that information? You're saying it came from the extraterrestrials.
It would have had to. Freud tried to claim that most of Hebrew civilization came from the ancient Egyptians, and he wrote a book called Moses and Monotheism in which he tried to support this. But the ancient Egyptians even knew less than the Hebrews, so it could not have come from them.
Well, when you look at some of the things that they were up to, they weren't too bright about a lot of things. They had some weird notions, but they also had some great ideas and exercised some brilliance.
They were marvelously advanced in many respects.
Came down through ancient Sumer, and we're all familiar with the tale of Gilgamesh.
Well, I'm familiar with that music, which means that we're going to take a break here for the news at 10 o'clock. But we'll be right back with Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden. Back to hour two of Open Mind on this Saturday night. My name is Bill Jenkins, and our subject tonight is one that should provoke your attention, I think. It's called The Threshold of Immortality. You ready for that? Well, turn her up a notch and sit back. Because we have some people who have been deeply involved in bringing that about. And not just the threshold we'd like to step over. And perhaps those first haltering steps have been taken. Drs. Lee and Vivian Gladden, they are the authors of Heirs of the Gods and other works, in fact. They will be appearing. In fact, we just heard about during the last hour, you're going to be at the Alexandria 2 bookstore. When is that going to be?
The 4th.
Monday evening, the 24th?
Yes.
Slides, and people can really get into it with you down there with our good friends Victoria and Ralph at the Alexandria Bookstore. Tomorrow night, or Tuesday night, you're
Tuesday
with
Tuesday night, the Mine Expansion Institute.
Right. Richard Green and all
Richard
of his
Green,
people.
Richard Green, yes, and all of his people, and that will be at the Holiday Inn in...
out at the airport?
At the airport, yes. Uh-huh.
Let's see, I think there's a number on that, 818-501-5559. Yes, need reservations for that.
Yes, 7:30.
They can give you all of the information on where it's going to be and what the costs are and all of that. If you'd call that number, 818-501-5559. You'll be talking about Heirs of the Gods as well as...
Oh, absolutely.
As well as the other things that have...
That's right.
Not only captured our imagination, but also now become something that we can sink our teeth into in a more than just a historical way. Or maybe there's some things we shouldn't sink our teeth into. I think you're saying red meat. Come on. Go back and recheck that part.
Mercy, Bill. I think I converted you.
I can't live without my New York strippers every now and then. Those are awfully tasty. Are you sure? They were a part of the food chain, weren't they?
I'm afraid not.
You're afraid not? What are all those cows around here for, then? Don't blush on me now, Vivian. I'm putting you on a little bit.
For shame, Bill.
For shame.
Well.
I'm a better teacher than that, though.
You have taken this information, then, and using these techniques which have proved to be very hard to break down. We've had some people that have questioned your academia on this. How far did they get?
They didn't get very far.
They didn't get very far, did they?
No.
When it comes to the archaeology, when it comes to the linguistics, when it comes to the etymology, when it comes to what it's saying, when it comes to what is really being said in something like the Bible, they kind of had to defer or demur, as it were.
I'm afraid we're laden down with portfolio.
We've almost doubled the amount of data that we have since we first appeared on this show.
Yes.
Bill.
But the
over 10,000 entries at the last count.
The exciting thing was, now, that throughout all of this Bible, throughout what the celestials were teaching us, was some very important lessons about our own body. A body that, according to your research, they helped craft. And they had no intention of it just coming and going and coming and going and coming and going.
As I said earlier, this body that they crafted, as you said, was and is intended to live forever. And they intended us to have immortality, Bill.
As they did.
Yes, as they do, yes.
However, it doesn't come easy. There are some things that you have to do in order to maintain the vessel, as it were.
It's what you might call a conditional immortality, in the sense that you're immortal provided you keep doing the right things. But if you stop doing the right things, or if you run into an accident, it can be terminated.
Well, you know, you can be you can drive down the road, and you can drive safely, provided you do certain things,
mm-hmm.
like drive on the right side of the road, stop when you're supposed to, and et cetera, et cetera. You can use all kinds of symbolisms there. What are some of the things that you learned that we should do? We do know that in Heirs of the Gods that there was a very, very important aspect to the seventh day of rest.
Mm-hmm.
It did not have the same nature, I don't think, as the religionists like to say that we should do it on Sunday, but it was just a seventh day because we have a seven-day cycles about so many of our systems.
We can touch on that a bit.
Mm-hmm.
For thousands of years, the seventh day, or the Sabbath, has been kept by the Jewish people, Hebrew people, and then there are groups of people, sects, that the Seventh-day Adventist, Seventh-day Baptist. I myself was reared, I call myself a spiritual Hebrew, spiritual Jew, a Seventh-day Adventist.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept the seventh day, the Sabbath. But what we found...
And the Christians
said,
kept the sixth day.
Well,
it was seven for them.
First day, though.
It was actually the first day.
First day of the week.
Sunday is the first day of the week.
Sunday is
not the Sabbath.
No, it is not. And, but as we said earlier on the program, we found that in the research, in terms of... the archaeolinguistics references to the DNA helix, and for those who've just tuned in, the sugar and phosphate molecule that lies at dioxyribonucleic acid, DNA that lies at the root of the cell of every of all our cells, that the Sabbath day, the seventh day, that the cells repair, not every 7 years, every 7 days. It's very, very clear in Isaiah, said that if you will keep my Sabbath, that I will be a repairer of the breach, and you will have your re-reward.
Mm-hmm.
And the old waste places will be repaired. And in the etymology, subsequently which became the archaeolinguistics, we find that that's talking about genes, and it's talking about the repairing of the DNA. And actually, one of the key words that we found referring to the helix was the word corruption in Psalms. Says, I will not suffer thy Holy One to see corruption. And we actually found that it was talking about the winding windings and unwindings of the DNA helix.
So the ancients or the celestials knew that this seventh day of rest was very important to the continuation of life.
More than important.
That's right.
It was
vitally necessary.
Yes. And they have to do it. We actually found that... you know, we cloistered this information at one point because we were ready. We've mentioned it in the book some, and then we're putting it into our other book. But they, it's done with, let's say that they are interdependent upon one another. Their civilization, they would not survive, it would not survive if they did not have their Sabbath convocation.
A truly high level of civilization, say millions or billions of years in our future, Bill, cannot be achieved, we've discovered, unless you have that kind of continuity of creative effort and genius, mm-hmm. which is provided by immortality. Imagine what would happen, for instance, if Einstein, instead of living the somewhat less than 70 years that he did, had been able to go on working on the unified field theory that he was working on at the time of his death. His life had been extended by several times what it was.
The Teslas, the great geniuses. We have a very inefficient system now. You spend 20 years growing up. You have about 20 years in which you can do your work, and then you spend the rest of it growing down. And laying down and going, so you can get born again, and it's very inefficient.
But preserving the genius of the race mm-hmm. through immortality is a key to the very highest levels of technical development. But coming back to your question about what have we discovered are the preconditions of immortality, there were three in particular that we have found are definitely given in the archaeolinguistic analysis of the Bible. First, it's necessary to maintain the biochemical balance of the body, what's called a homeostasis. And this is done primarily through nutrition, because this is where the raw chemical materials that our body uses to function,
the red meat
and the life processes come from. So you must eat the proper balanced diet. And in this age, when we have so much pollution and when the soil has been depleted as it has, you must also take in supplements of vitamins and trace minerals to replenish those which our environmental destruction now deprives us of, or to offset the toxins and the waste which our polluted environment constantly injects into our body. That's the first condition.
Yeah, you have to. You have to keep the physical thing at its top peak.
The biochemical balance, right?
And basically that's by what you eat and drink and breathe, right?
And if you could keep that biochemical balance constant, in theory, you could live forever. But there are things that happen to us which constantly threaten that balance and in time disturb it.
We're certainly doing ourselves in because the quality of the food that we eat, go to any hamburger stand on the street. And the quality of water that we drink some of the LA tap water, and of course the air that we breathe. These are the things that we take in are toxic and are getting worse and worse, and so we do have a problem in keeping this chemical balance of our physical self together.
And to add to that, Lee mentioned about the soil. Perhaps some of the people listening may not know in depth what we're saying about that. Now, we know about acid rain, but there's also the problem of the soil being depleted, to be more specific, of magnesium and the trace minerals, at what we know as the trace minerals. And that's because the soil has been turned so many times, you see, that it has lost its nurturing power.
And it's filled with pesticides and synthetic fertilizer.
There are many things that are happening to the soil, not only that, and the chemicals that we're putting into it, but then the chemicals that are just raining down on it from our current technology, which is giving us electricity and getting our cars run. That creates all kinds of little chemical changes in the ground as it lays there, and molecules take on a different nature, which, of course, are depleting the soil, which is growing the good vegetables that we think that we're eating when we go down to the store and buy them. Okay,
everything becomes carcinogenic.
Yes, can't eat anything, can't drink anything, no red meat.
Well, that's point one, Bill. Point two, you must maintain the immune system, one of the main factors that causes what we call real destructive aging that leads to death is the decline of the immune system. And there are certain things that we can do in addition to bringing the correct chemicals into our body and in addition to correct nutrition that help maintain the immune system at peak functioning. And one of the most remarkable of these is the 7-day rest period that Vivian was speaking of. You know, it's curious that the week is the only calendrical event, the only calendar span that isn't tied to the stars in some way. The day is tied to the stars. It's the rotation of the earth in relation to the sun. The year is tied to the stars. It's the length of time it takes our planet to go around the sun. But the week is not tied to any kind of celestial event. So how is it that humans all over the earth celebrate a 7-day week cycle?
Somebody threw a dart someplace.
The answer is that the week is tied to biorhythms rather than celestial rhythms. And there are a number of rhythms within our body that are 7-day rhythms. And as Vivian said, if you don't rest on the 7th day, what happens is that the catabolic or destructive physiological activities begin to overtake the anabolic, the buildup activities, and you tear down more than you're building up. It's not enough just to sleep 8 hours every night. Every 7 nights, you must actually rest for 24 hours or else.
We're talking about a day of rest now.
We're talking about a day of rest.
You know, in our society, people say, well, hey, I have Sunday off. And look at that Sunday. It's as active as any day that they have done. They're going here, there,
they
and everywhere.
They eat more on
that
day than any other day.
You go to church, you eat like a pig, and you visit all your friends. And you go for long drives and heavy traffic.
At a peak.
And that's not what we're talking about when we're talking about...
That's not a day of rest.
A day of rest at all. You know, this was... I share something with you when I first got this information from you. 5 years ago, I was involved in that 7-day-a-week activity at all times. I was working 7 days a week. And I didn't like working 7 days a week, number one, and I just stopped doing it and took that 7th day off.
Wonderful. Wonderful.
And there was a dramatic change in me physically and mentally when I did that.
Why, you look like a Greek god?
Are you talking to me, ma'am?
I'm talking to you.
Oh. Things got worse in Greece than I thought.
You have rejuvenated,
yes,
Bill,
you
since you started doing that.
Very
though,
fine.
Really.
Yeah, it has made a change. And I am as lazy as they come on Sunday. Now, sometimes that aggravates certain people in my household because that's not doing anything. That's right. I'm just taking it easy. Thank you much. And that's it.
Wonderful.
And
yourself,
I want everybody
well,
else
thank
to do
you.
It.
And they will give you the reward.
Well, they're doing all right. And what was the third thing now?
That brings us to the third. The third is rest. Mm-hmm. And it's more than just resting. We have recovered partially, not totally. That's why we're on the threshold of immortality. We have recovered an elaborate ritual, a 5-stage process through which one goes during this 24 hours of rest. And we will be talking about some aspects of this in the seminars that you have mentioned. But we have been practicing this ourselves for almost 10 years now. And Vivian, in fact, has been practicing a good part of it for a good deal longer.
Well, I happen to know how old Vivian is. And I am not trying to stroke you, hon. But I'm going to tell you that you look better than 20 years younger than you really are. I'm not going to tell the folks how old you are.
Most people take Vivian to be in her 30s, and I am
That's
going to tell
right.
how old
they would
she
take
is.
Her to be my daughter, and I happen to know that she's older than that, and you really upset me, Vivian.
And Vivian will be 60 on her next birthday.
Well, I wasn't going to say that.
No, I'm going to say it, because most people think that she's in her mid-30s.
I would look at her and say between 35 and 40, and a very beautiful 35 to 40.
Thank you. Everyone can do it.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, you are a tribute to that. You really are. So these weekends that people have off, it's all right, I think, you know, a weekend you're off from your job work, and if you want to go play football and run down on the beach and everything, do that on Saturday or do that on Sunday, but take one of those days and do nothing. Meditate, rest, switch off the TV, keep the radio on, it's okay.
KABC.
Yeah, KABC. If you listen to the other ones, you know, that'll drive you crazy, too. Yeah, turn it off if you want.
But, Bill, what you're discussing here is primarily the cosmetic aspects of aging. And what is equally important, or even more important to remember, is that what's happening cosmetically is also happening to the...